Well, what is of value? That's the question before us this morning. And I guess our current situation has caused many to reevaluate that question. What is of value? I mean, maybe had we asked that or thought about it a few weeks ago, there'd have been things that seemed so important, so urgent, that we chased our tails doing. And yet now we realize maybe they weren't so valuable after all. Whereas now there are other things, aren't there? I mean, we could think of things from face masks to ventilators to healthcare to provision of food. All these things maybe have gone up in our valuation as things that we need. So what is most valuable of all? Well, that's the theme of today's passage in Matthew's Gospel. What is of value? I'll read it for us. Matthew 26 from the first verse. When Jesus had finished all these sayings, he said to his disciples, "You know that after 2 days the Passover is coming, and the Son of Man will be delivered up to be crucified." Then the chief priests and the elders of the people gathered in the palace of the high priest, whose name was Caiaphas, and plotted together in order to arrest Jesus by stealth and kill him. But they said, "Not during the feast, lest there be an uproar among the people." Now when Jesus was at Bethany in the house of Simon the leper, a woman came up to him with an alabaster flask of very expensive ointment, and she poured it on his head as he reclined at table. When the disciples saw it, they were indignant, saying, "Why this waste? For this could have been sold for a large sum and given to the poor." But Jesus, aware of this, said to them, "Why do you trouble the woman? For she has done a beautiful thing to me. For you always have the poor with you, but you will not always have me. In pouring this ointment on my body, she has done it to prepare me for burial. Truly, I say to you, wherever this gospel is proclaimed in the whole world, what she has done will also be told in memory of her." Then one of the 12, whose name was Judas Iscariot, went to the chief priest and said, "What will you give me if I deliver him over to you?" And they paid him 30 pieces of silver. And from that moment, he sought an opportunity to betray him. Well, notice how our passage begins. It tells us that Jesus had finished all these sayings. That is, we've come to the end of Jesus' main teaching, public teaching, as recorded in Matthew's Gospel. We've heard so much of it over these past few months. But now that's come to a close. And so, if you like, the stage is set for the denouement, the climax, the ending to all that's come before. And so we're told, having finished his teaching, Jesus says to his disciples, verse 2, "You know that after 2 days the Passover is coming, and the Son of Man will be delivered up to be crucified." So first here, Jesus speaks of crucifying God's King, crucifying God's King. Now remember, the whole gospel building to this point. And now, as it comes into sharp focus, these final three chapters, there will still be much that is hard for us and those disciples to get our heads around. And so notice how Jesus begins. He reminds them it's Passover time. Of course, they knew it was Passover time. But more than that, it's telling us something. This annual feast, which was to remember God's great rescue of his people from Egypt. Well, that what happened back then is going to help the disciples and us get our heads around what is about to happen to Jesus. Now, as we get to this point, of course, Jesus predicted many times what is going to happen. But the danger of that is that as we come to chapter 26, we're over familiar with it. Let me just read again what Jesus says here. It's so stark. "The Son of Man will be delivered up to be crucified." I wonder, does that still jar for us? Because it should. Remember who the Son of Man is? We've seen it numerous times. God's glorious, powerful, promised King, the one with all dominion, all authority, whom all people should praise. And then crucified, that agonizing, humiliating, shameful death. How do these go together? That is the big question. How are we to view what we are about to witness through Matthew's gospel? How is it that God's great King could and should and had to suffer in this way. Well, that's going to be the next three chapters. But this opening passage that we're looking at this morning challenged us to consider how we are going to look at what we're about to see. Because first, we see costly devotion. Look down to verse 6. Now, when Jesus was at Bethany in the house of Simon the leper, a woman came up to him with an alabaster flask of very expensive ointment, and she poured it on his head as he reclined at table. So Bethany, a small village just outside Jerusalem, and no social distancing. So Jesus, his disciples gathered at this house of Simon the leper. And then, of course, events take this unexpected turn. In full view of them all, this woman enters. She is carrying this alabaster flask. It would be so valuable, worth probably around a year's wages. Think of that. Probably a family heirloom. And then what happens next is so shocking. The woman heads towards Jesus, takes that flask in her hands, she breaks it and empties the entire contents onto Jesus. On his head, everything. Just like that, all in one go. Can you imagine the stunned silence in the room? Then as the fragrance begins to spread to every corner, everyone trying to work out, what have we just witnessed? What have we just seen? What can we smell? But then we can imagine, can't we, the slow murmur of conversation rising up. And that leads us then to verse 8. And when the disciples saw it, they were indignant, saying, "Why this waste? For this could have been sold for a large sum and given to the poor." This rings true, doesn't it? Today we can so easily imagine people, well, maybe people like us, raising the very same concern. What a waste. After all, it's right. Just think what could have been done with that sum of money. Thousands, even tens of thousands of pounds. And no doubt, as the disciples said this, they were expecting Jesus to come in, back them up, give the definitive verdict on what had just happened. Well, Jesus does break his silence, doesn't he, verse 10, but to say, "Why do you trouble the woman?" Maybe first assumption was, or maybe Jesus being sympathetic, he's trying to cover this embarrassing moment and give cover for this lady, except, no, Jesus doesn't excuse what the woman did, far from it. He commends it. And so we must think, why does he do that? Well, first of all, according to Jesus, it was beautiful. It's there at the end of verse 10, she has done a beautiful thing. How is it beautiful? Well, look again at those last two words in particular. She has done a beautiful thing to me. Notice what Jesus is saying without any embarrassment at all. The actions were beautiful, says Jesus, because they were done for him. Of course, Jesus was aware of the grinding poverty, no doubt, around him. And if you were here last week, you remember at the end of chapter 25, he definitely has a concern for the poor, as we've seen all through the gospel. And yet now he unashamedly commends this lavish, costly outpouring because it was done for him. So why? In what way was it beautiful? Well, as we go on, according to Jesus, it was preparation for burial. We've reached verse 11. "For you always have the poor with you, but you will not always have me. In pouring this ointment on my body, she has done it to prepare me for burial." So you see, Jesus' commendation of this woman has to do not only because of her actions were directed at him, but also because of her timing. They were beautiful because she did it now. She was preparing Jesus' body for burial. Now, maybe some of those hearing this would think that's such a morbid thing to say. Why speak like that? But Jesus wants them and us to realise she had recognised the value of his death. And so it was right that she drew attention to it like this. And as we see this now, it should be coming into our minds that, as having read Matthew's gospel, we should be thinking the same. It was a few chapters ago, but remember, Jesus himself told us that he, the Son of Man, came not to be served, but to serve to give his life as a ransom for many. So he didn't lose his life, he gave it. Jesus, the only way for the payment to be made to rescue us from the slavery of sin and to bring us to God now and forever. And so realizing that, it begins to dawn on us that Jesus' death is of such value that it'll be at the heart now of worldwide gospel proclamation. Look down to verse 13. Truly I say to you, wherever this gospel is proclaimed in the whole world, what she has done will also be told in memory of her. Well, let's just try and take in what Jesus is saying here. It is remarkable. So we're at this small gathering in this run-of-the-mill village in the Middle East. Here we are listening to these words of a man with not long to live. We'll soon discover that even his closest followers don't really get what he's talking about. And in fact, they'll desert him and even deny him, deny they ever knew him. And yet Jesus, this man, is sure, well, for a start, that his death won't be the end. Jesus knows that Good Friday will lead to Easter Sunday. But more than that, that this message about him, the gospel, will spread far and wide into the whole world. And it's another of those moments in Matthew's gospel where if we didn't know better, we would simply laugh at this. These are the words of a crazy, deluded megalomaniac. But of course, we can't really laugh because this morning as we gather, separated a little bit around southeast of England and over in Wales, well, here we are, living testimony to the proof of these words of Jesus of so long ago. He was right, of course, as he always is. We look back and the message has spread and it's continuing to spread to all sorts of people in all kinds of places. And that is all the more remarkable when you think what the message is. It is that the Son of God must be crucified. It's about a death. And it is the news that this death of that one man, in fact, is the good news for all people everywhere. So someone looking in on all this might say, well, how then has that message spread so far and wide? And of course, ultimately, there's only one reason, which is because there's been many more like this woman. That is, people who have valued Jesus' death as she did. So we haven't got the ointment to give, but we have got mouths which speak. And we've been the ones, as have believers down the centuries, who share this message, who tell others, which is remarkable. Jesus has warned us in Matthew that speaking up for him will be costly and hard. And then in the end, we realize this death is of such value, others must hear. And it's worth us reminding ourselves that is true now, as always. As our screens at the moment bombard us with the practical challenges of this difficult day, well, as the followers of Christ, of course, we must be at the forefront of helping others where we can, praying for relief from suffering, loving our neighbours, whoever they might be. And yet we must still ask ourselves and others, what is needed now most of all? What can actually make the biggest difference, meet, if you like, the greatest need today and then into eternity, whatever happens with this virus? It'll be very striking how Christians and churches today respond to this situation. What we emphasize, what we focus on, it'll reveal what we think is most valuable. So Matthew has recorded for us this woman's costly devotion. But that's not all that we see. We also see calculated rejection. We see that in two ways. First of all, the powerful who plot. We've seen all the way through Matthew's gospel, haven't we? Those in authority rejecting Jesus. And now that comes to a head in verse 3. Then the chief priests and the elders of the people gathered in the palace of the high priest, whose name was Caiaphas, and plotted together in order to arrest Jesus by stealth and kill him. But they said, not during the feast, lest there be an uproar among the people. So who have we got here? These are the important people. There they are, look, meeting in a palace in stark contrast to the house of a leper. And of course, these people's role was to serve the people. especially in their corporate religious life together. Now, as we know, God has sent his king, his promised king, into the world according to the scriptures. And so of all people, these leaders should know who Jesus is. They should recognize him. What's their response? He must die. Well, they're in power, they're in control, supposedly, but public opinion is stopping them for now. So what can they do? Well, not a lot. Until, even in our passage, we find the insider who betrays. Look down now to the other side of the woman, verse 14. Then one of the 12, whose name was Judas Iscariot, went to the chief priests. Well, we've known this was coming, but it still should hit us hard. Remember Judas, as Matthew reminds us, one of the 12. He'd lived with Jesus. He'd seen the miracles. He'd heard the teaching. More than that, he'd simply experienced the sheer quality of Jesus' life, his compassion and concern. He'd seen everything. Which is just a reminder to us today that proximity to Jesus and Christian things doesn't necessarily lead to true devotion, far from it. Judas turns, why? Well, it must be that he's asking, what kind of king would go and be crucified? How will that achieve anything, Judas thinks. It is certainly not what he had signed up for. And so he asks the chief priest, what is, I'm sure you'll agree, a chilling question in verse 15. What will you give me if I deliver him over to you? We've thought the eternal benefit that there is from Jesus' death for all who trust in him. What does Judas, if you like, think he can gain? Well, only the money he can earn by giving others access to Jesus to kill him. Judas thinks he might as well earn a quick profit, if nothing else. Yet there's greater irony, 30 pieces of silver. That really is a pitiful sum. Nowhere near the cost of the woman's ointment. But if you like, that's all now Judas thinks Jesus is worth. And so verse 16. From that moment, he sought an opportunity to betray him. Well, we've seen this morning quite an introduction to these last three chapters of Matthew's Gospel. And in our passage this morning, we have seen, haven't we, shocking actions in two different ways, from this woman and from Judas. And Matthew, if you like, puts them side by side to get us thinking, well, more than that, to challenge us. Because in the end, we have to decide, what value do we put or not put on Jesus' death? Well, we see that gathering in Bethany is soon over. And as we read on, we'll find over the next few weeks that quickly Judas and the chief priests will move fast. And indeed, in 2 days, Jesus will be dead and crucified. But we've been shown how to view that death, how to value it. It is so precious, of incalculable value, because this is the ransom planned, prophesied, predicted, the one that would bring us to God. And therefore it makes sense, if we get that, if we see it as valuable, well, we will realize that Jesus' death is the good news to be proclaimed to all the world. I'll lead us in a prayer as we close. Our Father, we do praise you that Jesus, your glorious King, came into our world not to be served, but to serve, to give his life as a ransom for many. We do thank you that he endured to the end, to crucifixion, for our sakes. Pray that you would help us now to grasp the value of this death for us and for all the world. Would we trust in Jesus' death? And now, especially now, make it known to others. For Jesus' sake. Amen.